Welcome to the NBA Front Office Show, part of the Almighty Baller Network. I'm your host, Keith Smith, and joining me today is a friend of mine. He is the Orlando Magic expert, Philip Rossman Reich of Orlando Magic Daily and Locked On Magic. He is the host. If you want to know anything about the Magic, you need to check out Orlando Magic Daily, and you need to be following their Twitter. Phil is all over everything that goes on with this team. Phil, how's it doing? How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing really well tonight. How are you doing, Keith?
I'm doing great. Really wanted to say thank you for having me. I know I've been on your show a couple times on Locked On Magic. We always have a good conversation, and you know it's a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to getting into this and talking about the Orlando Magic and the off season and the roster and where things might be headed.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting time. Really interesting summer coming up for the Orlando Magic. I'm sure. We're gonna have a lot to say here on this show today.
we're not even to the summer fully yet, and a lot has already happened here, but we'll get into all that. So I always like to start by, before we can move forward, we need to look back a little bit. So we're gonna take a look at what happened. Sorry, man. If you want to tune out for a minute, read emails or something, that's okay. I'll cue you back in when we're ready to move forward. But in the 2017 season, rough year for the Magic. Definitely a step back after showing a little bit of progress the prior season, but 29-53, last in the Southeast Division, 13th in the Eastern Conference. The offense was kind of predictably what we thought it might be, and it was a mess. 101 points per game, 27th in the league, 103.7 offensive rating. That was 29th, so it was even worse than it might have looked at times. On the plus side, they were 12th in pace, which Frank Vogel had stressed in the preseason that he wanted to run a lot and push the ball and take advantage where they could. And they did that more so, and we can talk this in a second, but I think more so after the Serge Ibaka trade than prior. On the defensive end, where Vogel had made his bones as a coach in Indiana, 22nd in both points per game allowed and defensive rating for both of those. So in the lower third of the league, just never really quite came together for the Magic after a lot of additions last summer. Phil, just give everybody an idea of kind of how things went from your point of view. I know you were there for all 82 of them.
Almost all 82. I missed two games while I was celebrating Northwestern's.
Oh, that's right.
Bid.
We'll give you that
80,
one.
80 was enough. It was just not a good season for the Magic. Any way you slice it, the team came into the year investing a lot. They traded in some of their young assets, especially Victor Oladipo, and really even going back to the Tobias Harris trade to create cap room and try and inject some veteran presence into the roster, and it completely backfired. Serge Ibaka had a good season individually, but wasn't the piece that they needed to get over the top. After starting the first month of the season as one of the top five defenses in the league, they around December 8th or 9th, they just nosedived. They went from a top five defense in the league through the first month of the season to one of the very worst defenses in the league, and just nothing seemed to be able to get it all back on track. And even then, Orlando was struggling so much to score that they were playing a lot of games in the low 90s, and that just wasn't sustainable. I mean, as good as the defense seemed to be playing, they were still about a 500 team, and eventually they just all kind of let go of the rope defensively, for lack of a better term, and never really got it back. And so without that defensive anchor, as we all expected, their offense really, really suffered. And so the season was quickly lost, by December, January, and was clear the Magic were going to have to trade Serge Ibaka to recoup some assets. And they looked a little bit better after the All-Star break when they got Terrence Ross. They moved Aaron Gordon back to power forward, where he looked much more natural. He went from averaging somewhere around 12 points per game to around 17 points per game. His rebounding shot up as he was closer to the basket. And so things looked a little bit better. But even when you look under the surface of that, they finished the last 20 or so games of the season with a 333 win percentage. I think they were 8-14 or 8-8. It wasn't a good record. They looked like they were playing better. And even statistically, their offense was a little bit better. They were still in the bottom 10, but it was better than 29th. But their defense was still a mess. They were still losing a lot of games. They were still getting blown out a lot. They had, I think, six losses this year by 30 or more points. This is just a team that needed a reset of some sort. And of course, they got that beginning of it at least by firing their GM and hiring Jeff Weltman to be the president of basketball operations.
Yeah, so and that's a great segue. So the offseason really kind of started almost at the trade deadline, in a sense. They moved on from Serge Ibaka, which did two things, right? It brought in Terrence Ross, who is now, he signed for a couple more years for the team, and he fits as a wing scorer, can play a little bit of defense, but really injected another shooter. And the big thing, I know you and I have had this conversation a million times, is they looked a little more like a real functional basketball team. Even if it didn't always have those results, they looked more like a team for that's built for this era versus previous where they didn't.
And I think that was a big thing that the Magic wanted to do. It seemed like players were kind of back in the right spots. You know, one of the criticisms of the way the Magic built their roster last year was that they had too many bigs. They were going to force Aaron Gordon to play the three. And I think the hope was that players would grow into their roles. That didn't happen. You know, they were playing Nikola Vucevic and Bismack Biyombo together a lot. Both Vucevic and Ibaka like to pop on pick and rolls. They're not necessarily kind of hard rollers to the basket. And so there were a lot of players that were just kind of getting in each other's way. And without a lot of three-point shooting to begin with, the spacing was just terrible. And so moving Aaron Gordon back to the four, putting the ball more in Elfrid Payton's hands in pick and rolls rather than trying to isolate a guy like Gordon on the perimeter or a guy like Ibaka even in the mid post, really opened up the offense a lot. The team was a better offensive team after the All-Star break. And you're right, they looked like a real team. That looked like guys were in the right spots to take advantage of their talent, especially two key guys that the Magic had and Payton and Gordon. Looked like they were where they needed to be to succeed in this league.
Yeah, we are going to, just in case anybody's wondering, we're going to definitely spend some time on those two guys towards the end of the program here, because there are definitely some big questions with those two. But let's move forward now. Let's get out of the morass of last year, move it forward into 2017 offseason. There's a lot of excitement, and that excitement started, a couple of weeks ago when we were down there for the introductory press conference of Jeff Weltman as the new president of basketball operations. At that time, it had already been announced that the team had hired John Hammond from the Milwaukee Bucks to be the new GM. He was not present. He was wrapping up some things in Milwaukee before he could get down to Orlando. But for me, it felt like, for the first time in the last couple of years, it felt like there was a new energy in the building that day. And there's always some of that when it's a new, kind of a new beginning, but it felt really positive, where the last couple of years, things have not felt so good. Even this offseason, where they made a bunch of big moves and signings, there were so many questions with them. The hiring of Weltman, to me, feels like it really is setting the franchise in a new direction, in a really positive one. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, well, when you're kind of at the bottom, there's really nowhere to go but up. You know, I think, like you said, even when they made the move to bring in Ibaka and the moves that they made, it just reeked of desperation almost. And, you know, this is not to say that, you know, it absolves, you know, Rob Hennigan of anything, but there's certainly a feeling that ownership was putting a lot of pressure on Hennigan to deliver. And, you know, as it sometimes happens, he kind of cracked under the pressure and didn't put together a product that could win. And so you bring in Weltman, it feels like a lot of that pressure has been released. And I think some of that is a new guy. They're going to let the new guy do his thing. But differently than when Hennigan came in with very little experience in the league. That's not to say that he wasn't smart and wasn't capable. By all indications, everyone at the time and even now would say Hennigan was ready for that job and just didn't perform. You know, this is a results-driven business. But Weltman brings in, 25 years of experience in the NBA? Hammond brings in 35 years of experience in the NBA. It feels just a complete opposite of Hennigan. These are guys that have a lot of relationships in the league, have a lot of experience in the league. They have their failures for sure, but they've also got a lot of successes too. And it feels like the Magic now have the organizational structure that they feel like can bring success to the team. Alex Martins has promised to reinvest in the basketball operations department, to make a significant investment, not just in hiring Weltman and Hammond, who, you know, probably come at a much bigger price than Hennigan did on his own. It definitely feels like it's a new time for the Magic, and it's, you know, there's a lot of trust in that experience bringing good decisions to the team to begin propelling them forward.
Yeah, and you know, the we talked about it being really exciting. One thing is, as we dive into this, it's really important to remember with the Magic where they stand right now. We don't really know what these guys think and where they want to go with things. Jeff Weltman came up. He did a really good introductory press conference, did kind of what they all do in those. It's they say a lot without saying very much at all. And he, you know, and that's a little unfair because I did like his, you know, comments on, you know, culture's not anything he's interested in. He wants to win. He wants to build a good team. I liked that he's not putting timelines on things. But he didn't get at all, even when kind of pushed in the direction, didn't get at all into talking about players or draft strategy. Any of that. And then we were talking a little bit off air before we started. It's kind of gone on lockdown out of Orlando. There's nothing coming out. We're not even hearing who they're working out anymore, unless the players are kind of sharing it themselves. So it's kind of interesting to see, you know, the direction here is so that's a long way of saying everything we're going to say here, it's educated guesses, but they're still just guesses because we don't have a ton to work off of. So diving into the offseason details. So for the Magic, we've got them at a max cap space. These are my projections. If you're interested in finding any of this work, there is a pinned tweet to my Twitter timeline. I am at Keith Smith NBA on Twitter, KEITHSMITH NBA, no spaces, no special characters, nothing like that. Really easy Twitter handle to find. There is a pinned tweet to the top of my timeline that has a link to my NBA salary and roster sheets, which has a ton of information, more than you could ever want. And this is where I'm working all my things. So if you want to pull that up, follow along live, you know, pause your player, pull that up, preferably not while you're driving it. That's not a safe idea to do. So if you're sitting at a desktop, by all means, jump in. But you can follow on and see where these projections are coming from. So 19.8 is their max cap space. That's if they got rid of everything, didn't make the draft picks or traded the picks or anything like that. That is the max they can get to, keeping just the guaranteed money on the books. My projected cap space for the Magic is $13.4 million, which puts them right around the middle of the pack this year, as far as things go. And because how I got to that is, the Magic have three free agents, so we're going to talk about all three of those now. I have them, my opinion, and I'll make it easy for Phil here, is I think all three of them are going to be gone. I think they'll renounce Jeff Green, Jody Meeks, and Damian Rudesh. The first two are unrestricted free agents. Rudesh is a restricted free agent. I think they're going to not give him a qualifying offer, and they'll just renounce all three and move on and take the space. But, Phil, let's take them one by one. So Jeff Green came in on the one-year big contract, got basically all the cap space that was left to come in and help fill out the bench as the third forward in the rotation. What do you think about him? Any chance he's back in Orlando next year?
Before I dive too deeply into Jeff Green, another thing to remember about the Magic deciding whether to sign or re-sign these guys is the Magic roster is already, or at least it's full for last year at 15 players.
Yep.
They've got four draft picks in the upcoming draft. I know we're going to talk about the draft a little bit later, but you got to free up roster spots for your draft picks, essentially, correct? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And you only get so many of those two-way contracts. And so I think what the Magic do with those draft picks will also play a role in what they do with these free agents. Because I agree, I find it hard to believe that any of the three are going to be back. Getting back to Jeff Green, I don't see a way that Jeff Green is back next year. Like you said, he came in on a one-year, $15 million deal. It was kind of, there's no one left to sign. We need someone. You know, we believe we're a playoff team. We need someone to play. We need a veteran to come off the bench, maybe anchor that second unit. We'll give Jeff Green a try. I mean, worst case scenario, he plays well. We trade that $15 million contract into other valuable assets. That didn't happen. He was, more disappointing than usual, I would say, maybe. I mean, I think it might be fair to say that there has been some deterioration in Green's skill, because for all the hate that Jeff Green gets, he still was a quasi-serviceable player. You can still expect him to get 10, 12 points per game, you know, good for a really good game every once in a while. Green, though, on this Magic team, really, really struggled. You know, he's not the most efficient player to begin with. He kind of stopped the ball a lot and a team that needed motion and needed ball movement to get guys open. And it just didn't work. He wasn't what the Magic needed. And so I certainly, because the Magic have to get better this year or have to look for ways to improve their roster, letting Jeff Green go and opening that salary spot is absolutely the decision they have to make to at least give them a chance at signing someone in free agency that can help the roster grow a little bit, or just to be able to absorb some open cap space should they make a trade in the free agency period.
Yeah, so let's talk about Jeff Green for a second here. He was someone who I saw a lot of. If you don't know, if you're following along, part of my NBA responsibilities is that I cover the Boston Celtics, so I saw every game he played in his Boston tenure, and he was the most frustrating player to watch, because there was games where you're like, all right, man, this guy's got it. He went toe-to-toe with LeBron James in games and outplayed LeBron, and then 3 weeks would go by and you'd be like, oh yeah, Jeff Green's still on the team. I forgot when he was scoring 7 points a game, you know, after a 50-point explosion. So it's he's just tough. And what really fell off for him with the Magic was his shooting. It really cratered. Shot under 40% for the year overall, 27% from three. Just really tough go around with it. I think he's still a guy who can help a good team off the bench, but it's going to have to be in a role where he plays 15, maybe max 20 minutes a night. And you're absolutely right. That role is not here in Orlando. It's time for him to move on. And it's time for us to move on. So let's get to the next guy. This one I think there might be a little bit more question about. So I'm interested to hear what you think. Jody Meeks, what do you think about him?
Yeah. I think Jody Meeks, if there's a guy the Magic will re-sign, it's Jody Meeks. And I think what's going to be really important with him is figuring out what the right number for him is. Because last year he made, what, $7.5 million on his contract last season? Or it was $6.5
million. $6.5 million, yeah.
So his cap hold is a relatively big – it's not a huge number, but it's a relatively big number.
$9.8 million, if anybody's wondering. It's $9.8 million.
So certainly the Magic – I don't think the Magic should re-sign him to anything more than what he was making last year. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think the Magic should – if the Magic are thinking of re-signing him, they need to make sure they bring him back on a lower number. And honestly, they probably need to do it quickly, you know, relatively quickly. Otherwise, they may end up playing that bird rights game where, oh, we waive his bird rights to have cap room to sign someone we want, or, oh, we're going to bring back his bird rights, you know, bird rights, you know, I think – you know, the way that you can activate and deactivate bird rights, if I'm not mistaken, if I'm wrong, please correct me on this, that a team can decide to retain or reject a player's bird rights, you know, essentially until they use that cap room.
Yeah, what would happen is they do have his bird rights, so they would hold his bird rights all the way until they needed that cap space, and then if they said, you know, we're renouncing you, then they lose those bird rights, and he nothing changes as far as free agent status. He's already an unrestricted free agent. But what they do is that removes the cap hold from the Magic's books. And then the Magic have that additional money to go spend. But then they can't then exceed the cap after. So that's the way it kind of works with bird rights. So he's one of those guys that could kind of sit on the books until they need the space, if they need the space, and then they could go back at it from there. It's, you know, one way or another, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. What's interesting for me with Jody Meeks is he shot 40% from three, and it was in a small sample because he did only make it into 36 games. And I know we sat next to each other for that crazy explosion he had late in the season against the Nets, where he just went completely insane in the third quarter and won a game that helped the Celtics clinch the number one lottery odds. So everyone in Boston thanks Jody Meeks for
always
that.
Happy to help.
Yeah, right. At least something positive came, and he did get 9 points a game, mostly coming off the bench. He played, you know, 36 games, as I said, only 10 starts in there. And this is a team that no matter what they do, they're still going to need a bench shooter. So I think you're right in the sense that he is probably the most likely guy to come back. I just think there's always room for shooters on every roster. And I think some other team's probably going to say, you know what, hey, we'll kick you a little bit more money on a roll on maybe a contender or at least a playoff team to come here. And at that point, I think for Jody Meeks, it's probably maybe I could get a little more out of Orlando, but he's now deeper into his career. And he might be saying, you know what, it's time to go win and playing some meaningful games down the stretch.
Exactly. And it's important to note here that he played only 36 games last year, but the injuries that cost him the time were two unrelated injuries.
Correct.
He missed most of the 2016 season with a broken foot, and he came back toward the end, was set to come back for the Magic, and then discovered that it wasn't healing properly, so he went back for surgery for that. Came back 19-20 games into the season, looked great. The Magic were a better team with Jody Meeks on the floor. They needed that shooting desperately. And he had some big games because they were able to get him open shots because teams were just so used to compacting the paint against Orlando. And then in January, he goes in for a steal against the Pelicans and breaks his thumb, I think was what injury was. He fractured a bone in his thumb. And he was out until virtually the last 15 games of the season. So the Magic didn't really get the full Jody Meeks experience, but when he was in there, they were a better team, and he can definitely still contribute on the Magic or on a championship team. For Orlando, it's going to be about the price. I think they would want to re-sign him, but I don't think he's a priority to re-sign.
And if I remember right, just in case anybody's trying to put some links together, he was drafted by John Hammond with the Milwaukee Bucks.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So Hammond did draft Jody Meeks, so he obviously saw something in him once upon a time. All right, so let's move to the last free agent now. We don't need to spend a lot of time on Damian Rudej. He was kind of a training camp guy added and really played himself onto the roster. He beat out some other guys for a spot there at the end of the preseason, and he was the one who stuck around here at Orlando, and he ended up sticking all season, I think maybe to a little bit of a surprise to several of us. But he's now 30 years old. He came to the NBA late after overseas career. Played in 45 games, but mostly garbage time at the end of games. And he said it to us in preseason that when he was with Frank Vogel in Indiana, Frank Vogel told him, if you're not hitting shots, you're not going to play. Well, he didn't hit shots, so he didn't play. Right? I mean, it's really that.
That was the exact point I was going to make.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, you can't let that quote go by, right? I think that was his kind of shining moment of the season, almost, which is sad that it came in September and October. But it's at this point for me, there's really no reason to keep him around as a restricted free agent. And the big thing that I think costs Damo here is that the Magic need the roster spots. Now, what I could maybe see is they no qualifying offer, they renounce him, they send him packing. If he doesn't receive a big offer to go back home overseas and play in Europe, I could see him maybe coming back with the Magic to training camp again and trying to fight for a spot, but that's probably the extent of a return for him. What do you see on him?
Yeah, I like the idea of maybe giving him the training camp shot again, but I don't really see that. I think that, he's an end of the bench guy. There isn't a lot of value, especially with where the Magic are at. I think with Orlando thinking they were a playoff team, a veteran presence who knew Vogel's system was valuable to the team. And to give Damo all the credit in the world, he seemed like a fun guy to be around in the locker room. So I think, through some of the losing, he kept things kind of loose or was able to kind of help cut some of the tension of losing a little bit. Maybe he's a good locker room guy to have, but with where the Magic are at, I think it'd be more useful to spend that spot on a young guy who can develop, or even a guy you could be bringing up from Lakeland or a two-way guy from Lakeland. I just think that the role Rudez was meant to play was lost. I was surprised they kept him past the January 10th guarantee date. The Magic were really out of the playoffs by that point anyway, and I thought it was very strange that they weren't devoting that spot to someone else or trying to find a way to kind of mix the roster up to see if they could bring someone out of the D League or bring someone that may not be in the league right now to try and get a spark on the team and give a kid a chance. And it just didn't happen that way. And Rudez did his work, but the results speak for themselves. didn't shoot the ball well at all, 31.3% from beyond the arc. The Magic needed 3-point shooting from him, and he couldn't provide it. And, you know, I don't think there's any hint, you know, from his last few stints in the NBA that he's going to get much better. And so I just don't see a reason to even entertain the idea of bringing him back.
Yeah, and, you know, there was some sense at the time when he was brought in that he was here to kind of help Mario along. They know each other, mm-hmm. both from Croatia. But even Damian, right from the jump, you know, said, you know, I know Mario, but there's almost a 10-year age difference. So, I mean, he knows him, but, you know, there was never a sense that they were super tight or that he played the mentor role for him here or anything like that. So, you know, that was a... you know, with Mario's own future, and we're going to talk about him, I'm gonna throw you a curveball and add that to our little outline here.
Ooh, let's do it.
But we need to...
I haven't gotten Mario hate in a while.
Yeah, we need to spend a few minutes on Mario. So, all right, so that wraps up our free agents. So we are pretty much on the same page that all three probably go. If any is going to return, it's probably Jody Meeks. Now where it gets a little more interesting, towards still back into the roster, but that's what we do on the NBA Front Office Show. We go deep on these rosters. We're going to talk about every guy on each team that may or may not be back. So let's go to the back end, and let's start with these guys are all the partial or non-guaranteed players. So what that means is they have either some amount owed to them, or they are completely non-guaranteed, so the Magic could waive them at no cost to them. First guy up on this list, he's the most accomplished of the group, and that's C.J. Watson. So C.J. Watson, kind of a combo guard, probably a little bit more point guard than shooting guard at this point, but he's played both positions, both starting and coming off the bench for the Magic over the last couple of seasons. He is guaranteed $1 million, which, where the Magic is, that's no big deal if they need to eat $1 million in dead money on the cap, and he becomes fully guaranteed on July 10th. So the good thing with CJ is July 10th is deep enough into the summer where the Magic will know prior if they need the additional $4 million, because his salary would become fully guaranteed at $5 million. If they need that additional $4 million in cap space, they'll know before his guarantee date. So what kind of works in their favor, he gets the million no matter what happens with him, or he gets $5 million if he makes it to July 10th. Where do you see CJ Watson's future with the club?
Well, I don't see him with the Magic next year under any circumstance. If he's still on the roster July 9th, they're going to cut him. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the Magic want that roster spot. CJ he hasn't clicked with the team in 2 years. You know, last 2016, he had this weird calf injury that knocked him out for most of the season and didn't really do anything. Last season, he had to play a lot of shooting guard because the Magic brought in DJ Augustin to play the backup point guard. And he struggled with his shot again. He did some good things defensively. He was just solid, but wasn't spectacular. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I think at this point, the Magic want to move in a younger direction. They want to, like I said, they've got 4 draft picks in this coming draft. I suspect that the Magic will try and use all of them to kind of rejuvenate the roster a little bit. And so they need to clear up some spots to bring in those rookies and or go after free agents. And CJ Watson is a perfect candidate for that. Now, Watson being a veteran, I do have a sinking suspicion, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later on in the show, about what direction the Magic want to go in. Because of the cap limitations that they have, if the Magic are looking to make major improvements, they're not going to be able to do it in free agency. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to explore the trade market for some of their core guys. And having a player like CJ Watson, who is $5 million against the cap, but you can get rid of $4 million of it, that's really valuable in a trade, especially if, say, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about this at length, but let's say you're trying to trade Nikola Vucevic to free up space for Bismack Biyombo, or because Nikola Vucevic is probably one of the more tradable guys on the team. Vucevic is being paid $12.5 million this year, I believe. You add $5 million to that, that's a $17 million player, or $17 million of player that you can bring into the roster. And for the team that's acquiring them, who might be looking to cut some salary, that's $4 million that you can wipe off pretty easily. And so I think that there is a lot of potential for the Magic to try and use Watson as something of a sweetener or as a cap filler in a trade at the draft or right before free agency to try and improve the roster. So I don't think we'll see Watson on the Magic next year under any circumstance, but it wouldn't surprise me if he is a key piece as far as making salaries match in a trade that the Magic are looking to pursue down the line. You'll any Magic trade rumor, I can almost guarantee you're going to hear CJ Watson's name attached to it.
Yeah,
not as the main player, but as a necessary piece.
Yeah, if he's the main player in any kind of trade, I can't wait to see what that one is. But it'll be
Jeff Weltman is a god.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So yeah, no, I'm with you. I think as you're going to see this is an overall thing that I should have touched on a long time ago in the show, so I apologize, but there is not the cap space available this summer that people think there may be after what's happened the last 2 years. One is teams spent a ton of money the last two seasons, some of it questionably, some of it really well, but still it was a lot of money, and the cap didn't go up nearly as much as they had originally projected. It was originally projected to be $107 million, and now it's coming in at only $101, which is still the all-time highest it's ever been, but that's not as much of a bump as we had projected it to be. So that is really making things a lot tighter. So that's where your point of CJ Watson being used as really salary filler that then you can wipe out $4 million of, that might have big implications for a team that's looking to get off some money and move. And the Magic may be in a position to maybe eat a questionable deal if it brings another young asset back in terms of a young player or a draft pick. So that is something definitely interesting to watch there. Let's move into the next guy. So the Magic, after the draft day trade last season that saw Serge Ibaka the rights to Domantas Sabonis, who is the Magic's first round pick, traded for each other with Oklahoma City. The Magic only had one draft pick, and that was Steven Zimmerman. He came in up and down summer league. He's big, but he's also extremely skinny, pretty frail for a big guy, really, small, got pushed around a lot. Spent the bulk of the season playing for the Erie Bayhawks, which were the Magic's old NBA D League. Now as we transition to the NBA G League, and I promise I'll only mess that up about 1,000 times between now and getting it stuck in my brain.
It's like for our Orlando listeners, it's like MGM Studios.
Yeah.
It's not MGM Studios anymore, but we still call it that.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And it's that's a good one. And so now if we were flipping it forward a year, Zimmerman last year would have only been traveling about an hour or so away from the facility to facility, because the Magic's new NBA G League team is going to be located in Lakeland, which if you're not familiar with Central Florida, it's right down the road, and it's literally right down one highway.
Lakeland's about the midpoint between Orlando and Tampa, a little bit past the midpoint between Orlando and Tampa for those that are looking for Florida geography lessons.
There it is, and now look at that. So we can add that to the list of the things we do here on the NBA front office show. So the Magic, one of the things that Alex Martins, the team president, said was really important to him making a hire was Jeff Weltman was part of the Toronto Raptors using Raptors 905, which is a similar arrangement just down the road from the parent club, using them a lot. They moved shuttled guys back and forth in between, and he really wants to see that. So the guy like Zimmerman, he could have really benefited from that. Practice with the Magic and then go play in the games in Lakeland. As it was, Erie can't really pull that off. It's a little too far to do that. So he spent a lot of his season playing up in Erie. What do you think his future is with the team? He's fully non-guaranteed. There are no minimum guarantee for him. Becomes fully guaranteed on July 6th.
Yeah, I think the Magic will end up keeping him around. They obviously used a pick on him, and it was a different management group that selected him, but I think the general consensus on Zimmerman was he's a really talented player. He's got a lot of skills. It's just about putting on that muscle and kind of getting it to translate to the NBA. If they drafted him knowing he wasn't going to be ready the first year, and knowing that it would take a year, maybe two, to get really ready for the NBA. If they had two-way contracts last year, Zimmerman absolutely would have been someone that you spent a two-way contract on. Let him spend a lot of time in the G League, in the D League, whatever you want to, whatever it's called whenever I'm referencing this. Let him spend time there to develop, even a full season there to develop. I mean, I think, if they could have had the Tyler Harvey arrangement, they probably would have liked that more. But Zimmerman is a really talented guy. For a long time, he was even projected as a lottery pick, I think, mm-hmm. for a stretch of time during his freshman year. You know, he's got talent, and even when he played on the floor, you could see he had some of that talent. He just wasn't quite ready to muscle up against the men of the NBA. I mean, I took some heat a little bit. See, you know, in the last game, they let him go up against Boban Marjanovic, and Marjanovic is obviously – Boban is just a huge person, and he just enveloped Zimmerman. I mean, there was one rebound where I think Marjanovic, you know, just reached out over Zimmerman and rebounded the ball over him, and there's literally nothing Steven Zimmerman could do. So he's just got to add some strength and some muscle. He can clearly play at the D League level. He had a 2020 game and was, I think, pretty close to a double-double in the few games that he played for Erie. And so I think it's clear there is something there. It just needs some time to grow. I think the Magic are willing to give it time to grow. You know, he's on a second-round kind of minimum contract, so it's not going to cost them a lot in the long run. And so I think that they're willing to be a little bit more patient with Zimmerman. He's got to show signs that he's ready to play in the NBA. Probably at some point during the next season, though, if he wants to stay on the team beyond that.
Yeah, and one thing I want to mention with Zimmer, well, two things, I'm sorry. The first is he's only going to be 21 at the start of next season, mm-hmm. so that's big. Still very young, a lot of room to grow. And his, now we're talking an extremely limited sample size here, because he only played in 19 NBA games and only 108 minutes in those games. But his per 36 rebounding numbers, 11.7 a game. He did show the ability, he showed it in Summer League, he showed it in the D League, you mentioned, had a 20 rebound game there, that he can get after it and get to the boards, and that's a pretty good number. So, you know, although he's small, he's not afraid to get in there and mix it up, not small, height-wise small, weight-wise and bulk-wise, but he is willing to get in there and mix it up, so that's interesting. So we'll have to see with him. For the record, I'm with you, I think he comes back as kind of the project developmental big, third center kind of guy on the roster. The next two guys, so the Magic did finish the season, despite Zimmerman being their only rookie for the bulk of it, did finish with a couple other rookies, guys that they signed really late in the year. So Patricio Guarino, I know this is one of Phil's favorites. He loved this guy in Summer League. And then Marcus Georges Hunt, who was brought in. Georges Hunt had spent the bulk of his NBA D League time with the Boston Celtics affiliate, Maine Red Claw. So I'm going to talk about him real quick. He is essentially your kind of all around good, not great player. He was a good player at Georgia Tech, kind of a late bloomer, came along late in his senior year, but he can handle the ball a little, can pass a little, shoot a little, defend a little. The problem is it's all of those things are a little. So he is probably the kind of guy who, my guess is, the Magic, what they did with both of these guys, they gave them non-guaranteed contracts, again, fully non-guaranteed. They both become $275,000 guaranteed if they make the opening night roster, and then fully guaranteed on the league-wide guarantee date of January 10th of 2018. That's when all contracts become fully guaranteed. What those types of contracts generally scream is, those are training camp guys. So my thought is both of these guys are going to come back and at least go through training camp with the Magic. You can go up to 20 guys on the training camp roster, so it seems to make sense that these guys will both be back. But Phil, go ahead and talk about Guarino a little bit and what, you know, you saw with him.
Yeah, Guarino during Summer League, I thought, had really good defensive instincts. He played full career at George Washington, so he had some college experience. He had a good run in college. He's a decent shooter, although he really struggled to shoot when he got to the Magic. He actually, after Summer League, the Magic didn't grab him. Mm-hmm. They had him for three games before he went to play for Argentina in the Olympics. The San Antonio Spurs grabbed him, had him in training camp. He was, I think, their last cut. And then ended up playing most of his season with their D League affiliate in Austin, and so he had a decent run there. You know, you could kind of see some of the tools that he has. He just wasn't able to put it all together. When he got to Orlando, you saw some of the defensive ability that he had. He just really struggled to shoot. You know, I had high expectations for Guarino personally because I really liked his game. But Georges Hunt looked like the better player to me. It really surprised me with his play in the five games that they played in Orlando. They obviously didn't get a lot of playing time. Mm-hmm. And their stats are very unimpressive when you look at them a little bit deeper. But both of these guys, you know, they're hungry. They work hard. You know, they got a lot of reason. You got a lot of reasons to like both of them. I think we'll see them both in summer league. If they're allowed, I think they're both rookies, so they'll probably both mm-hmm. be on the Magic summer league team this year.
I would imagine.
Be a relatively stacked summer league team considering all the draft picks that the Magic have. And so I think we'll see them play there. That'll be part of their evaluation. They'll get their shot at training camp. But I think it's a long road ahead for both Guarino and Georges Hunt to make the Magic's roster for summer cap purposes. Their cap number is going to stay on the books because I think the Magic will keep them into training camp. That's one of the promises that was probably made to them when they were signed, that they'd at least get a look at training camp. So unless the team and the player come to agreement that, yeah, you're not going to get a shot here. You know, if you want to look around to play for another team, we'll let you go. Unless that happens, you know, I think we'll see them both in training camp, but I don't know if either one will make the final roster unless they drastically improve over the summer.
Yeah, and so I'm glad you mentioned the draft picks. It's a good segue. It's almost like you host your own show or something like that.
Yeah, like I have a podcast.
Yeah, right, something like that. So let's hit those draft picks now, because that's probably what most of the people tuning in here really want to hear about that, and then what we're going to touch on just in a bit. So the draft picks for the Magic, this is a big one, not only because it's the new regime's first draft at the top running things, but they've got four really good draft picks. In the first round, they've got the number six pick, that's their own pick. Then they have the number 25 pick, that's the pick that came from the Toronto Raptors in the Serge Ibaka, Terrence Ross deal. And then they have two second round picks, the 33rd and the 35th. And one thing before we get into who you think the team's looked at from who they've worked out and then where you think their direction should be, one thing I want to mention, John Hammond has had success in the draft with two types of players. One is he's not afraid to go after a guy and pick guys where people are like, oh man, he went after that guy a little high. Did that with Brandon Jennings. I know Brandon Jennings is not the greatest player in the world now, but he had several productive years.
He had a good run in Milwaukee.
He absolutely did. Then the big one, the one that everybody loves, Giannis Antetokounmpo. He was the one who grabbed him. Now, it gets built up a little bit that nobody knew who Giannis was and all this. People knew who he was by that point. But John Hammond was the one who had the faith and the trust that he was going to be good and drafted him.
Weltman was the one that pushed Hammond to go see him in person in Greece.
Absolutely. So, and then the next this past draft, he drafted Thon Maker higher than a lot of people thought Thon Maker should go. And by the end of the year, he was their starting center on a playoff team and starting to look like a really good player. And then he, in the second round, got Malcolm Brogdon, who I know a lot of people said he never should have slipped that far, but he did. And Hammond was the one who pounced on him when a lot of other teams could have had him prior to that. And he brought him in, and Brogdon was their starter. So when you have two rookie starters from the same draft class that are starting on your playoff roster, that's a pretty good draft to me. So that's part of what makes this so important. So with all that said, with all that draft capital coming in, what's going on with the Magic? Who are they already looking at, and what direction do you think they're going to go in this draft?
Well, the big name that they've already had in was Dennis Smith from NC State. That's probably the one guy they've looked at with that would be picked with the sixth pick that they brought in already. And they actually brought him in the day before the NBA draft lottery. So it was before Jeff Weltman and John Hammond were in place. Matt Lloyd was the interim GM. He was the one that, I guess, set up the workout. Obviously, the coaching staff, Frank Vogel and his staff, kind of ran that workout, that one-on-one workout or one-on-oh workout. And so Smith is really the only big name that's come through Orlando so far. Zach Collins of Gonzaga said that he had come into Orlando. He's kind of a early teens, maybe up in the late lottery type of pick. So I don't see him. If Magic picked him at six, that would be a real reach. And I think there'd be a lot of upset fans. with the sixth pick in this draft, this isn't the place to take the big reach, like taking Giannis Antetokounmpo or taking Thon Maker at 10. I don't think this is where we'll see, you know, that MO come into play, because in this draft, there are legitimately seven or eight really, really good, you know, potentially really good players. I mean, obviously you got Fultz and Ball at the top. And then after that, three through six, seven, maybe even eight, are kind of a jumble. You know, Josh Jackson is probably the best of that bunch, but you're starting to hear some doubts about him, and certainly his shot is a little bit concerning, especially in a league that is emphasizing shooting and a lot more. You got Darren Fox, who's climbing, seems to be climbing, but you know, he's got questions about him. You've got Dennis Smith, you've got Malik Monk, you've got, I'm sure I'm going to forget someone here, Jason Tatum, you've got Jonathan Isaac, you've got Malik Monk. There are really good, and then even after them, you know, you can maybe make an argument for Frank Ntilikina to potentially grow into that player and kind of, you know, wiggle his way into that tier. And the 7-foot center from Arizona, Lauri Markkanen, a lot of people consider him the best shooter in this draft. So there are really good players, and so I don't think the Magic need to take a stretch. A lot of people ask me what are the Magic's needs, and I tell them, the Magic need everything. They need a star. And I think that they can draft that at six. I don't think they have to, you know, move up to go get their guy. I think a guy with star qualities is going to fall into their lap at six. Obviously, it comes with more risk. The later in the draft you pick, the more risk there is. You know, you have fewer choices. But if the Magic can get a guy like Dennis Smith, who can grow into their eventual point guard to maybe replace Elfrid Payton, that would be a great pick. If they end up taking Jason Tatum, that would be a good pick to me. If they end up taking John, you know, a lot of people have said, you know, John Hammond tends to like these rangy athletic forwards. If they end up taking Jonathan Isaac to kind of fit that gap, I certainly would not be upset with him. He's a little bit rawer than I think a lot of the other players in this draft, but he certainly has that potential to grow into a player that you build your roster around. And so I think that at six, the Magic will have the opportunity to take a very good player that can kind of kickstart their rebuild. The question for the Magic, I think, is more about and while I think Weltman avoided talking about this at his introductory press conference, I don't think there's any doubt that the Magic still have some pressure to win. They're in their longest playoff drought in franchise history. You know, Frank Vogel has said our goal is to make the playoffs, and I think everyone in the organization will say we want to make the playoffs as soon as possible. Now, are they going to make kind of silly moves to try and force that again? I don't think so. But they're going to be looking to take a player that they believe can probably contribute pretty quickly and eventually grow into a star. They want high ceiling, high floor guys. And honestly, at six, I think they can still get that.
Yeah, I'm with you. And this is one of those drafts where I think we're really starting to lock into. There's a lot of reports and a lot of noise out there that Lonzo Ball is not a lock to go to. And there's even some thoughts, you know, maybe the Celtics might, you know, they're working out other guys. You know, why would they do that? Are they going to trade back or whatever? It's going to be Fultz and Ball at the top of the draft. That, to me, is locked in. But after that, things might get crazy. Because we don't know.
Yeah.
But one thing I am in complete agreement with you on is the Magic are going to come out of this with a player at number six. They're going to get someone who can come in and get these fans excited. I have been on the point guard train for quite some time. Phil knows this probably better than almost anybody else outside of a couple other people in my life. I'm not an Elfrid Payton guy, but that's just because I don't like point guards who can't shoot unless they're absolutely elite in other areas, and I don't think Elfrid Payton is. So I'm not the biggest De'Aaron Fox fan, but I'm starting to come around on him a little bit because I do think he's got some of those elite tendencies at some of the other things he can do, and his shot maybe isn't quite as broken as it might look. He might be able to improve on that. But the guys I'm starting to really come around on for the Magic are one of two guys, if either one of them's there, and that's Jason Tatum or Jonathan Isaac. And a lot of people would say, yeah, but they've already got Aaron Gordon. Yeah, great. So the big thing in the NBA right now is kind of going as positionless as you can. why not pair Aaron Gordon with one of those two guys? And then you've just got two forwards. You don't have to lock into power forward or that. Both Tatum and Isaac can shoot it enough that Gordon's still going to get his touches in close to the basket where he should be, instead of being completely forced to the perimeter like he was next to Serge Ibaka. But those are the two guys, I think. But no matter what, I think they're coming away with someone really good that the fans can be really, really excited about seeing long-term as part of the future at 6. Where it gets a little more interesting for me is at 25. So for what it's worth, off Draft Express, most recent mock draft came out within the last couple of days. Jonathan Isaac, who they have projected at 6. And then at 25, this is where, you know, you're kind of he's just throwing things out there and hoping they might stick a little bit. But they've got the big guy from Germany, Isaiah Hartenstein, who is, you know, he's a big 7-foot forward. There's been some, he might be a little Dirk Nowitzki-ish and all that. But here's the deal. He averaged 1 point per game last season overseas. But he's only 19.
You got to look at those FIBA tournaments.
Yeah, that's it, right? Yeah. You know, and that's what it is. You're really comparing him to almost a high school type kid, more so than you are any of these guys who we saw on the college level. So his name's the guy who's mentioned. And that would be almost, for me, that might be a draft and stash type of pick, where if they did go with Hartenstein, mm-hmm. he would be drafted. But I'm not convinced that's the way they're going to go. I think they might try to still get somebody at 25 who can come in and help right away. What do you think on that end?
Yeah, and I looked this up while we're talking here. At the 2016 FIBA U18 European Championship, Hartenstein averaged 14.7 points and 9.5 rebounds per game. So last summer in his international play, he had a pretty good stat line for those that are interested in learning a little bit more about him. But I agree, at 25, I think the Magic are looking for someone that is going to play a role for the team next year. I think that they know they need to add some depth, and they need guys that are going to be ready to contribute fairly quickly or can at least fill a role on the team while they develop. If they don't go point guard, if they don't go like a Dennis Smith or De'Aaron Fox at the top of the draft, I would really look at taking maybe a guy like Juwan Evans of Oklahoma State, who I really like. I think he'd be a really strong backup point guard in this league, or a guy like Frank Jackson from Duke. I think Frank Jackson really came on toward the end of the season. He's got the broken leg right now, which probably will scare some teams off, maybe for a first round pick. But he's a really, really promising prospect as well. A lot of the guys the Magic have worked out are, if the Magic are going to take that kind of reach on a rangy forward, this might be the place to do it, because you can take a guy like Tyler Lydon, who you might be in the range for a guy like Tyler Lydon, who's kind of a prototypical stretch four with maybe with a dash of athleticism added in. You could take a guy maybe like a DJ Wilson from Michigan, who has a lot of defensive talent. You just have to kind of get him to buy into a role and maybe not try and take guys off the dribble too much. There are a lot of options. There are a lot of big guys too toward the end of the first round. So if the Magic, as I suspect, are looking to trade one of their key guys, like they've got a logjam at center with Nikola Vucevic and Bismack Biyombo. If they're looking to trade Nikola Vucevic this summer, maybe they look to find a backup center toward the end of this draft, and that could lead them to take a guy like a Ivan Rabb or an Ike Anabogu, or, you know, depending on who drops, you know, maybe a Harry Giles is available at that pick, and that's a little bit of a stretch, but a guy who should be able to contribute fairly quickly off the bench because they have an NBA skill. Like Ike Anabogu is a fantastic shot blocker. That is what you want in an NBA center, especially a backup NBA center. Mm-hmm. And he's got a lot of room to grow because he didn't play very much last year at UCLA. He's a freshman. He's got a lot of potential, but he also has a skill that seems NBA ready. And so I think that's what the Magic are going to be looking for more at pick 25.
Yeah. And that's, for me, what you hit on was big, is it's going to be point guard and forward, or big, I guess let's just call it big, one way or the other. So if they go big early, I think they'll go point late. And if they go point early, then they'll go big late. I like the idea of Harry Giles. I think that would be a fantastic upside pick.
Yeah.
At 25.
If he falls to 25, you gotta
do it, right? Because especially you get a little leeway when you have that second first round pick where that guy can be the little more, I'm going to shoot for the moon type of guy. I mean, you don't go completely crazy, but that's not going crazy for Giles. Giles at one point was at the top of this class altogether amongst everybody when he was, but he's now coming off multiple ACL tears and, you know, had some health issues at Duke as a freshman. So definitely interesting. We're not going to get too deep into 33 and 35 just because it's already hard enough to project at 25. But I think what you're looking at there is probably whoever they pick, don't just disregard it. Because as I mentioned, that's where John Hammond got Malcolm Brogdon, was in that range last year for the Bucks, and he ended up blossoming to the starting point guard spot. My guess would be that may be where you see a draft and stash come in that late in the draft. Just four rookies on one roster, that's a little much for any NBA team to take. We don't know exactly how these two-way contracts are going to work out and if the draftees are going to be willing to take one or not. So we could keep an eye on that. Don't write it off, though. Don't turn off the draft at the end of the first round and just say, all right, I don't care whoever they pick. I'll read about it in the paper tomorrow. No, it's a read in the paper. How old am I? Read about it online tomorrow. but anyway, sorry to any of our newspaper friends like Josh Robbins. But anyway, now what I want to talk about, because this is probably the big
question. And don't forget, too, with a team that has four draft picks, there's the potential to trade up. And,
yeah, absolutely.
And you know, we know the Magic's cap situation. They don't have a lot of room to deal with. But 33 and 35 are, to me, when you're picking that high in the second round, you're essentially getting first-round talent for free, essentially. And so those picks have value. So if a team doesn't want to commit to the guaranteed contract that a first-round player brings, they might be willing to trade back into the draft and into that 30s range. And the Magic certainly are going to, I think, like you said, they're probably not going to want to bring four rookies onto the roster. I think the Magic will be a very active team on the rumor mill on draft night. Teams are going to be targeting them anyway to say, hey, do you want to package two of these picks to get us another first round pick? Or, you know, can we grab that pick to get this player you want? It's the Magic are going to have a lot of options available because not only, I mean, this isn't like a pick at 45, 46, you know, toward the end of the second round. These are high value picks where you get a choice of a potentially high upside player or potentially a guy who is a senior that no one wants to give first round money to but can contribute pretty quickly because of that experience or because of that ability. And so the Magic are going to be very, very active on draft night, even if they don't use all of these picks.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great point that you just made. They're probably one of the teams, along with Portland, that I think are probably the ones that are most – the teams you want to watch the most to see what they do leading up to the draft and doing that. So now let's talk about three guys who the Magic drafted somewhat fairly recently and all are facing some different things. So the first guy I want to talk about is Mario Hezonja. So the big decision with Mario is, are the Magic going to pick up his fourth year rookie option? Now, it might seem insane to suggest that they wouldn't. He was the fifth overall pick, I believe, right, when he was drafted. And guys who were drafted at a high, unless they had a catastrophic injury or absolutely stink and cannot play at all, they don't get rookie scale options declined. But Mario's starting to border on that second piece there. He hasn't had a catastrophic injury, but it's starting to look like, I don't know about this guy. My gut feeling says absolutely they're going to pick it up. You're not going to throw that away. It's $5 million. You're still in the middle of the rebuild, even next season. So this is for the 2018-19 season. Let's be clear about that. He is under contract, fully guaranteed for 17-18. But 18-19, how it works in the NBA on rookie scale is you have to, the year ahead, you have to pick it up. So the Magic, by opening night, have to decide if they're going to pick up the rookie scale option for Mario's fourth year to come back. He's already locked in for the third. Is that, to you, is that a guarantee that they'll do that, that they'll pick that up?
I would say I'm probably 95% certain they'll pick up that fourth year option. Hezonja has not played well. That's to say the least. He really struggled to get minutes last year. even with it seemed like a longer leash. He was supposed to have one NBA skill ready made when he came in. Like, the Magic knew he was a project, and so I think that gives him some leeway. But everyone believed in that draft, in the 2015 draft, that Mario Hezonja was probably the best shooter in the draft. He shot 29.9% from beyond the arc on more than two attempts per game last year in the limited minutes that he played. That's not encouraging, and his shot really, really struggled, and he's got to rediscover confidence in his shot if he wants to have any chance of making it to the NBA. The good news, I think, for him, and I think for the Magic as well, is he is staying in Orlando this summer. He's not going to play in Eurobasket for Croatia, or at least the plan is he's not going to play in Eurobasket for Croatia. So he's going to he's going to work out in Orlando for people who are wondering what Hezonja's been up to. When the Magic did open up their workouts earlier this summer, Mario Hezonja was in the gym. He was not shooting because the workouts were going on the floor, but you could see him in the weight room. You could hear him. Mario likes to shout a lot when he's in the building. he was in the building. He is working out. He is doing what he can to get better, or at least all indications are that. The good news, I would say, the good news is the Magic will be able to get information on this decision before they have to make it. I think the deadline to pick up team options is October 31st, regardless of when the season starts. Yep. So because the season's going to end up starting a week and a half, 2 weeks earlier this year.
Yeah, right around probably somewhere in the 17th to 20th of October. Yep.
Yeah. The Magic are going to have not only a full training camp, a full preseason, they're going to have 2 weeks of the season to say, is Mario Hezonja a part of this team's future? I think that is going to be really good information. Again, even without that, I think they'll pick up the option anyway. Like you said, fifth overall pick. He's clearly got talent. You can see the talent when he plays and the flashes where he plays well. It's just about consistency and confidence with him, finding the right role for him. The Magic tried playing him as a power forward last year. I'm not quite sold that will work. He just needs to get better. I mean, that's the bottom line. He just needs to get better. There's been some talk that maybe he'll play summer league. I kind of doubt that in the long run, especially with all the guys the Magic need to look at summer league this year. But every indication is that he's still going to be part of this team. They're going to pick up that option and kind of see where things go this year. And he's willing to put in the work to make himself better. He's not going to play for Croatia, play a role. I mean, essentially at the Olympics, he was stand in the corner and shoot. And he did okay with that. There was, again, no indication that he would have a bad season like this. But he had a bad season like this, and so now the questions arise, and he's got to prove them all wrong.
Yeah, and so now let's get into the two big ones. So Elfrid Payton and Aaron Gordon. So these were the two guys who were supposed to be, by this point, leading us out of this wilderness here in Orlando and back into the playoffs and getting right in there and really leading the way. They were drafted in the same draft class, came in together as rookies. This past year, they played in the two of the most games on the team. So Elfrid Payton played in all 82. Gordon played in 80. Right smack in the middle was Bismack Biyombo, played in 81. Couldn't play in all 82 because he was suspended for game one of the season for Biz. But to go back to Payton and Gordon, played a lot. They were both mostly healthy. Payton bounced in between the starting lineup and the bench a little bit. There was a time when he was sent to the bench as kind of a, we got to get somebody else out here. And it was DJ Augustin and CJ Watson both got shots in the starting five over him. Gordon essentially started almost the whole year. He did his turn through the bench as well when Frank Vogel and staff were just trying to kind of figure things out. But Payton
trying to make the offense work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They were trying to get a little bit more scoring on the floor at that point. So Payton, this is what it looked like overall for him. Because if you look at his stats overall, you might say, well, not so bad. You know, looks like they're okay. 12.8 points per game, 6.5 assists, 4.7 rebounds. 4.7 rebounds, that's pretty good for a point guard. Then 47% shooting overall. Well, that's not too bad. 27% from three on only 1.8 attempts. So he's not even attempting shots out there. What Elfrid Payton has turned into in a lot of ways, and trust me, I watched this guy forever, is Rajon Rondo, where it's, if I have the ball in my hand and I can get into the paint, I can do really good things. If I don't, then I'm basically useless and you're playing 4-on-5. Gordon, on the flip side, he spent most of the year playing at small forward, where he's not a small forward. He's just kind of a forward or a power forward if you're going to positionalize it. And by the end of the year, he started to look more like himself. He was getting to the rim. He was getting to the basket, making plays inside. 12.7 points per game for him on the year, 5.1 rebounds, and played, you know, fairly solid defense at times when was asked often to go toe-to-toe with some of the better offensive small forwards in the league, and did okay with that. So, but these are the big guns. These are the two guys the Magic need to know about. They're both up for contract extensions. As it works again in the NBA, because this is the NBA front office show, when a player's heading into their fourth year of their rookie scale deal, they are eligible to sign a contract extension for the first time that would kick in the next season. So in the case of these two guys, that contract extension would kick in the 2018-19 season. If they don't, the Magic have the option to let them test restricted free agency and still have match rights on any deal that they get, and they can match on them. Or the Magic, if things really, really went south, could just cut them loose and let them go completely and not even have anything to do with them anymore. Now, before we get into where you think it's going to go, one thing that's really important with the way things work, cap holds next summer in 2018-19 for first-round picks are changing. This year, they're 20% and 25% of the prior year's salary. So it's 20% if you are under the average salary in the NBA, which most first-round draft picks are, and then 25% if you're under, 20% if you're over the average salary. Most first-round draft picks are under the average salary, just the way the salary scale works. And both of these guys will be, I can guarantee you that. Next year, though, it goes to 30% and 25%. So it's going to be an additional 5% of a cap hold. So to give a picture, Aaron Gordon's cap hold next summer for the Magic to retain his restricted free agent rights, $16.5 million. Elfrid Payton, $9.9 million, almost 10, just shy of $10 million for him. You can really round it to 10 if you want. That's a lot of money to be sitting on the books and cap holds for guys if you're a little shaky and unquestionable. That's $26 million, $26.5 million or so that could keep you from getting a really good player. So let's bring it all the way back around. Phil, what happens? Are either one of these guys going to get an extension this summer?
I'll start here. I don't think Elfrid Payton's going to get an extension this summer. I think that there's new management, obviously. I think there's a very high probability the Magic will be targeting a point guard in some form or fashion. Despite what Payton is and what he does well, they clearly need an improvement at that spot. I've always kind of said about Nikola – I've always said this about Nikola Vucevic. He's double-double guy, produces good numbers. He is a solid option as a center, and that is an important position. You ask the Magic from 1997 to 2004 how important having a center is. It matters. And Vucevic is a perfectly serviceable center, but it's very difficult to win with him as your starting center. And if a better option comes along, you need to pursue it. And you shouldn't be. And I like Nick. Nick's a good guy. I think he's a good player. You can't be attached to that player, because if there's a better option there, you need to take it. Elfrid Payton is in that same boat, in my opinion. He is fine for what he is. He can produce stats. I mean, you talked about what he did for the whole season. After the All-Star break, he went on a tear. When the Magic started picking up the pace, giving him the ball more, he averaged 13.5 points per game, 7 rebounds per game, and 8.4 assists per game. He had 5 triple-doubles after the All-Star break. He can put up numbers. He can really do a lot of really good things as a point guard, even with teams laying off his shot. But his defensive inconsistency is a big deal, and obviously the team still wasn't winning games. So his production is fine, but he isn't quite what you need. And so I think that the Magic, Elfrid Payton was a Rob Hennigan guy. That was a boat that Hennigan kind of hitched his trailer to, or whatever analogy we want to use. That protection is gone. Hennigan's not there anymore. I think everyone is under review, and Payton's spot is very precarious. And I think that the Magic very likely are going to try and draft a point guard or find a point guard to provide consistent starter minutes. And so I think that puts Peyton in a very tricky spot for the team. And honestly, I think it probably means that they'll let him go into restricted free agency without an extension offer.
I will even go this far in Elfrid Payton. If the Magic draft a point guard at 6, they already have the backup bridge kind of guy in DJ Augustin on the roster. They're not even going to have to make a decision because Payton won't be on the roster. He will be gone.
I think there's a good chance of that too.
Yeah, if they draft a point guard at 6, I think he's going to be moved off elsewhere. And honestly, that would be for the best of him, for the new guy coming in, and for the Magic. It's better to just cut ties because you don't want that to be messy. That could be a really ugly situation and not be good.
And Peyton's known to pout a little bit. Like when they moved him to the bench, he was not a happy camper.
He wasn't. Yeah, he absolutely wasn't. You could tell, and his play showed it as well. So. All right, so let's get to the guy who is, he was the Dwight Howard replacement. He's the big superstar. He's the guy the Magic want to build around, the dunk contest guy. A lot of fun. Played out of position all last year, or almost all last year, as we already mentioned. But Aaron Gordon, think they're going to get something done with him. And if they do, what's that number going to be?
I think the Magic will try and get something done with Aaron Gordon. It's hard to say exactly what's going to happen. The situation almost... It doesn't remind me entirely of this, but I think this is probably the apt analogy. It's almost like when Stan Van Gundy came into Detroit and they didn't really know what to do with Greg Monroe. And I think he was a restricted free agent when Stan Van Gundy came in. And they ended up giving him the qualifying offer. He ended up taking the qualifying. I think he took the qualifying offer.
He did, yep.
And just played out that year. And it was just kind of a feeling out year. I kind of get the sense that The MO under Hennigan with the restricted free agents was try and get him back cheap, but be willing to pay in restricted free agency. And it worked. And with Nikola Vucevic, they got him in cheap. With Tobias Harris and Evan Fournier, they let him play restricted free agency and ended up bringing them back anyway on negotiated deals. They didn't have to match an offer sheet. They brought him back in. On negotiated deals. So,
and both of them, sorry to interrupt you, but both of them, pretty good deals too for what those players are. They're not, Fournier's a flat $17 million over 5 years was what he was given. Harris had one of those contracts that goes up and down and then back up, but average about $16 million or so a year for him, but both very fairly paid for what they are as players. So go ahead.
Exactly. And so I think that's going to be the approach the Magic take with Gordon. They're going to try and get him for cheap. And I think what's really difficult about Gordon is it's still really hard to measure his value. Because like you said, he averaged 12.7 points, 5.1 rebounds per game. He's just this bundle of potential right now. And it's really unclear what he's going to turn into. Because he's shown flashes that he could, with some internal improvement, become a star. He had a couple 30-point games last year. I believe Aaron Gordon will be an all-defensive team player at some point in the future. After the All-Star break, when they moved him back to power forward, he averaged 16.4 points and 6.2 rebounds per game, shooting 50% from the floor. About the biggest hole in his game right now is his three-point shooting. And he's got to find a way to improve that. It's just so hard to get a sense of what Aaron Gordon is. Because even the last 2 years, he's had to deal with injury. He hasn't had a full training camp in 2 seasons. And on top of all that, he's had a different coach every single season that he's been in the NBA. And so he both him and Peyton have been a victim of rampant instability with the Magic roster. And I think it has hurt their growth and development. Having said all that,
Oh, no, go ahead.
Yeah. And so having said all that, I just think it's really difficult to value Aaron Gordon. And I know if I'm Aaron Gordon and I'm looking at this Magic roster right now, I know I'm the future of this team. I'm going to pretty much say I'm going to have faith in my ability and I'm going to play myself into a bigger deal over the summer. And the Magic, I think, will be more than happy to match it if he does that.
Yeah. So here's my prediction on Aaron Gordon. If it's anything, $20 million annual value, and south, the Magic will jump all over it and grab him. And I think that's what they're going to offer. I think they're going to give him, and we'll probably never find out an exact offer, but my guess is they're going to hit him and his agent with something along the lines of 16 to 20 million annual value. Take it or leave it. If not, go ahead and play it out. If we're wrong, we still have match rights on you. If he blows up and let's say becomes, you know, a candidate for most improved player or starts to push the heck out of making an all-star team or something like that, great. So then the Magic have match rights and then they'll just get it done next summer when he's a restricted free agent and match any deal on him. And they'll do it up to and including a max deal, and they'll do it happily because he did it. So I think you're exactly right. They're either going to get him on a steal or they're just going to let him go to restricted free agency, and that's where it'll go. So with that said, we are smack out of time here on the NBA Front Office Show. I want to thank you, Phil, for coming on the show. Philip Rossman Reich, Orlando Magic Daily. And when it's daily, I mean daily, multiple times a day. It could be Orlando Magic multiple times a day. All Magic news is there that you could possibly need, as well as Locked On Magic. And I know Phil hits Locked On Magic really hard. Great detail there. If there's something going on with this team, Phil and his team have it covered, and they're going to let you know. Phil, is there anything you want to plug, anything you want to get out there and talk about?
Not too much. Just even for general NBA fans, we're doing our NBA draft profile series right now. So we're kind of taking one player every day and kind of breaking down what he does well, what he does poorly, and kind of where he fits into the draft landscape. It's not even really necessarily Magic specific, although we do touch on where they might fit in with the Magic a little bit. And so every day up until the draft, we've been doing it for about a week now. There is a draft profile up on the site. We did Jordan Bell from Oregon earlier this week. We did Lauri Markkanen today. We got Frank Ntilikina coming tomorrow. And, you know, pretty much we're hitting one a day. So, you know, there's a lot of guys to get to because the Magic are going to have a lot of stoves on the fire with this NBA draft. So we're hitting it pretty hard. So if you're looking for just general draft information, you know, our team is doing a really good job so far. Looking into some of these prospects, some people that you may not know much about, some people that you may know a lot, but you know want to see what we have to say. Check out OrlandoMagicDaily.com every day, and of course follow me on Twitter at @OMagicDaily for the latest on the Magic.
Absolutely. So thanks again for coming on, and Phil, I know I will see you in about 2 weeks at the Amway Center for the NBA draft. Really excited for that. Should be a fun night there. Again, everyone, thank you for joining us on the NBA Front Office Show, part of the Almighty Baller Network. You can find me. I am your host, Keith Smith. You can find me on Twitter at @KeithSmithNBA. Hit me up. If you are listening to the show and you like it, please, or you don't like it, please send feedback so that we know what we can do better, what you want to see and what you want to hear. We want to make this a show for you as we attempt to dive deep into what's going on with NBA front offices. We've got a lot of great guests lined up coming up over the next handful of weeks as we lead up to the NBA offseason. We're really excited to get everyone in here and talk about their teams and all that. So again, NBA Front Office Show, part of the Almighty Baller Network. Give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes if you have a chance, or on your favorite podcast player, and we will talk to you soon.